This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie, a good Sunday morning.
It's a great Sunday morning. It's a good time to be in Missoula. The weather couldn't be better this time of year. You know, places like back east are having heat domes, and it's 105 degrees out in the desert in Las Vegas,
right.
And here it's kind of perfect. And we have somebody here today to talk to us about two of our mutual favorite things. One is martial arts,
right,
and the other is golf. And our guest is Jake Palmer, and you
Parker.
Know Jake.
Right.
Jake Parker, excuse
right.
me.
That's okay. We met him over at the Ranch Club. I've known him for a few years, and we've talked, but this is the first time we're going to have an in-depth discussion.
I mean, he's a martial arts champion at the national level.
Yes.
He's a he was a professional golfer, and now he's an instructor in both of those areas and doing, you know, remarkably well in a little old place like Missoula, Montana.
Just another person tucked away in the hills of Missoula and the mountains of Missoula that is exceptional.
Right. You know, organizes the University of Montana taekwondo team that wins national, you know, championships.
Yes.
It's pretty remarkable.
He's at a school for 21 years. He's a teacher. He just was certified as a teacher only a few years ago.
Right.
So this is all kind of new stuff.
Right.
That we're going to learn about,
right.
Jake.
Plus, we know that he still has the bug to be a professional himself, at least in the golf world.
Yeah, sure enough. We've had folks on from the Ranch Club before. We've had Nick and Andrew on, Nick McKethan and Andrew. And I'll be honest with you. This is the first time, I think, when we, in terms of who we've talked to from the Ranch Club, where we've talked to somebody who, you know, is coming at it not just from the perspective of, like, you as a member, and this is what we do out there. It's like, let's talk about golf and instruction.
Right.
Right?
And the Zen, the Zen of golf.
The Zen of golf. This is an exciting, I can't wait to talk to him. Anyway, we'll be right back with our guest, Jake Parker from the Ranch Club, back after these words. All right, Arnie, we are back with our guest, Jake Parker, instructor from the Ranch Club and a master at taekwondo.
This is an honor to have you here today. A combination of a golf pro and a martial arts pro we've never had on the show before. So, Jake, it's 4 o'clock-ish on a weekday. What's your day been like so far today? Give us a rundown.
Well, you know, I got to the Ranch Club early this morning to set up for a U.S. Kids golf camp that we're running this week at the Ranch Club. And it was kind of an exciting moment driving up Reserve Street, and there was no one on Reserve Street at 7 a.m. It was the first time in a long time, so I thought, this day is going to be real good. We got to the Ranch Club, got things set up for today. We worked with the kids on pitching and full swing.
How many kids?
That's the fun part, is that it was 26 kids.
Wow.
On fire for golf.
And that's so great.
That's how I started my day.
Good. And how did it progress from no traffic on Reserve Street and 26 kids before you came here?
Well, 26 kids, you can imagine, on fire for golf. They just absorb instruction, and that's all they want to do. They just want to hit that golf ball. They want to smash that thing in the face as many times as they possibly can.
What are the ages?
So this age group is in between 7 and 10. And
wow.
So,
okay.
26 kids, yeah.
So you're not babysitting, you're actually instructing.
No, I don't feel like a child care instructor at all. I felt
right.
like a golf coach,
right.
you know, where these kids, you would look at them, and I could show you the pictures, they look like mini adults. They've got their polos, the girls are, you know, decked with their cute little golf outfits, and they've got
sure.
their own golf bags. And so 26 kids walking up our driving range to get to our upper deck, as we have a two-way driving range at the Ranch Club.
Right. Yep.
It was, I mean, it's a picture I can't wait to put on social media. Like,
oh,
they
awesome.
Just look like just little mini adults.
So do they watch golf on TV? Do they know who, you know,
Scotty
Tiger
Scheffler.
Woods is, or Scotty Scheffler, or any of these people?
That, yes, I'm very grateful to their moms and dads that they force them to do things like that. Yes, and so they know the few buzzwords, you know, from Tiger Woods to Scotty Scheffler, absolutely.
So you're an instructor, so that means you've had the golf bug for how long?
Well, my dad and I, he started building my swing, and he committed to doing that when I was tall enough to look inside his shirt pocket. And so I think I was right around age 12. And so he and I started studying golf, reading lots of books, and he started building my swing and building my game way back then. We'd watch all the majors together, Masters, And we would joke at some point that at some point I would become a golf professional and that I would somehow make it onto the PGA Tour and that I would play the Masters. And my dad, having a PhD in psychology, that he would be my caddy and he would keep me, light, right? He'd keep the mental game going. So,
did he ever explain to you there's only 100 people in the whole world practically that can do that?
No. There was no bubble popping back then. It was like, nope, trajectory is uphill, son.
And this is growing up here in Montana.
Growing up here in Missoula.
And Missoula. Yeah, you went to Sentinel High School.
Yes, went to Sentinel. My dad and I actually had the same PE teacher in high school.
No.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What was his name?
His name was Jed Beck.
Mr. Beck.
Yeah, he was the wrestling coach.
Oh, wow.
And so I didn't know this. You know, I learned later that I should have not kind of started our relationship off on this foot. But when he said, Parker, what's your dad's name? And I said, Jim. He's a big, tall guy, played basketball. I said, yeah, that's my dad. He goes, I had him back in high school. And I thought it was going to be funny when I said, oh, back when Lincoln was president. And he just looked at me. He was just a short little guy, but he looked at me and he says, I'll tell you the same thing I told your dad. Time passes, but you might not.
So do you remember about your phys ed teacher in school?
Yeah, I remember all of them.
Really?
Oh, yes. They made it. And that was like, as a young man, that was kind of like the person that taught you physical education, sports. You remember that person.
Yeah. Well, we had Mr. Mulligan. He taught phys ed. There you go. He was the coach, and he also taught sex ed.
Oh, no.
Which lasted about 20 seconds. His whole lecture was, just watch out. That's all. He was too embarrassed to talk about anything else. You know what to do. Just watch out. That was the end of that.
That'd
part
be a good
it.
Name, Mr. Mulligan, for golf, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He reminded me of all the teachers that you saw on Grease, in the movie Grease, when they were showing high school.
Oh, really?
That's exactly the way it was.
Arnie grew up on Long Island, but Arnie has a very unique experience with golf. He was a caddy, right?
A caddy early 13 on. Years old at Bethpage State Park.
Oh, really?
Yeah, famous. That was my closest, it was literally a half a mile walk from my house, and many weekends at 5 a.m. I would trek over there to the caddy shack and get assigned, and the younger kids got to carry doubles back in those days because the older kids didn't want to do that.
Yeah, you guys were called loopers back then, right?
Oh, yeah, loopers.
Yeah.
We got $3 for a single and $5 for a double.
Oh, wow.
So that was a century ago, but it was...
Oh, my God.
It was the first guy I ever caddied for. I lost the first ball he ever hit. That was the start of my caddying career. But it was fun caddying back in those days. So when in your career did you figure out you weren't going to be at Augusta?
Well, I don't know if I figured that out yet.
Oh, okay. You think this still might be a chance?
Yeah, I really don't know if I've figured that out yet. But what I do know is in the last 5 years, after I went to golf school a couple of times, one for a professional certification and the other one for a master's degree in golf, that this has just been, it's just like the game of golf. You can't script it. Right. You don't know what's next. And so, you know, as I'm building this big, beautiful resume in the golf world to transition at some point, when my 12-year-old goes off to college, I'm building a resume so that it'll be part of my retirement. And so my wife and I will go down south to somewhere maybe in Arizona or Palm Springs or Palm Desert, teach golf during the wintertime, and then come back up here and teach golf when the ranch club, when their golf season starts. And so that's kind of the retirement with purpose. Where it goes from there, just keep practicing.
What a life you could lead.
Senior tour, right? Senior golf.
Yeah,
by the way,
don't forget
Nevada and Las Vegas. There's a lot of golf courses there and a lot of opportunities. Well, I spent this last winter in Las Vegas, and there was a ton of great golf going on there.
Oh, yeah, that was the site that I went to for golf school for the USGTF was at in Henderson. And so, man, there are tons of golf courses, but in November, the weather is fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's funny. When you live here, you know what the options are. In Vegas, there's always a thing on social media, the top 50 courses in Nevada. we don't have 50 courses, but, it's pretty exciting.
Jake, how old were you when you decided that you wanted to get the certification and the master's in golf?
You know, I think 44, 45, I think I was 45 years old. And when I came home, this was kind of motivated by, that part of the story I was telling you, as my dad and I, he was building my swing. We'd watched all the majors together.
Right.
We studied golf. He built my swing. And My career really went from building 911 systems between my ages of 20 and 30 to opening my taekwondo school at 30 and running that for the last 21 years. And
right.
So my career went to full-time taekwondo. I lost my dad about 7 years ago. And so when he passed, I kind of hit that fork in the road. And I don't think midlife crisis, but, you know, I didn't go out and buy a Corvette. You know,
right.
I bought a Miata. It was a little more affordable.
Right.
You know, nice
Mazda.
And, but still cool.
Right. Definitely.
But that was, there was a lot of motivation. There was just something that kept calling me back to golf. And so I met a gentleman that then became my golf coach, and he spent 9 months with me preparing me for the 8 days that I'd spend at golf school and passing the player's ability test, passing the written test, the USGA rules test, teaching and verbal test. It's a big exam.
I would think, yeah.
Like an endless exam by the when you get there. And so, you know, I mean, I thought at 46 that I was going to be the oldest, you know, kid at golf school, and I wasn't. You know, there were lots of professionals that were of all ages, even all the way up to 65 was
really,
yeah, one of the guys that needed dual citizenship in the United States and South Korea, and the only way that he could get dual citizenship and live in South Korea and afford golf is if he became a golf professional.
When you went to school and going, did you have the promise of a job once you got out?
I did. And I think that that's somewhat atypical.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I was, so our general manager, Nick McKethan.
We know Nick.
Yep, love that man.
We love him.
Just absolutely appreciate him as such a good human being and such a great person to work for. My golf coach had reached out to Nick and asked him, hey, I'm preparing a kid for golf school, and he needs access to a course like the Ranch Club
right.
in order to kind of get the practice that he needs. And, you know, could we work out an arrangement? And so the arrangement was that I was going to be fixing ball marks in the green and fixing divots in the fairway once or twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nick would give me access to the Ranch Club between Monday and Thursday. So not the Friday, Saturday, Sunday for members, right?
Right.
But Monday through Thursday, I could play a couple of practice rounds
right.
and just get that practice that I needed. And I got there for the first day, and my job, again, fixing ball marks and divots, got changed to he wanted me to take a pitching wedge and pitch out of the fescue all the golf balls that were hit into the fescue from the driving range.
Mm-hmm.
So he just wanted me to chip them back into the driving range and do that a couple of times a week. And then that was going to be the payoff, right, where I
right.
get access. And so it just turned into I did that for the first day. And they hired me the rest of the afternoon and said, hey, what's your schedule? We'd love to get you going. And so I became a full-time employee of the Ranch Club and still running my taekwondo school and after-school program and slightly burning the candle at both ends, but it gave me access to the golf course, gave right. me access to what I was doing. And so I then went to golf school. And before I went to golf school the first time, you know, everyone was very supportive, very
right.
excited for me to go, you know, go do it, experience it.
Right.
And when I came back from the golf school, our head pro, Andrew and Nick, we had a meeting together where they offered me a forever teaching position at the Ranch Club.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And so it's, like I said, again, you cannot script golf.
No,
and you cannot
you can't.
Script this journey that I'm on right now. So
no, absolutely not. Yeah. You know, and
what about the mind? Let me ask this because the mindset that allows you to do that and to pursue that experience, there's a certain, to describe Jake's, you know, what Jake looks like in the studio. He's very relaxed. He's very calm.
He looks 35.
He looks
healthy.
Much younger.
Does.
But he's also very zen. He's very centered. Is there the connection with the taekwondo and the martial art that kind of is about who you are, and that's kind of those worlds work well together?
They certainly do. But kind of go one step further back, and that would be my father building that mental game in me first for not just golf but for taekwondo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, taekwondo is hard. You know, I represented the University of Montana. I was on the University of Montana collegiate taekwondo team. And,
right.
you know, we're fighting the best. You know, I mean, U.S. Collegiate Nationals is 126 different university teams. I mean,
wow.
we fought Texas, MIT, Harvard, Princeton, you know, Virginia. I mean, it's a serious thing. And
right.
so having that mental game, he built that bubble in me where I can climb inside it. I can focus on what I'm doing. I certainly had the right coaches and the right teammates with me. But this was my dad's, you know, his ability to, get me to focus on things, get me, build my attention to detail, and then really to kind of take that anxiety or that fear of doing something where I could fail, doing something that is going to challenge me and take me out of my comfort zone. You know, he had a really brilliant way of talking me through those things, building those tools in me so that they didn't affect me the way that I think they affect other people.
Was he a teacher?
He was a clinical psychologist.
Oh. Ah.
He was director of administrations for the Mental Health Center here in Missoula.
So
amazing.
What do you find after years of doing both? The common thread. There has to be a common thread in your mind between golf and taekwondo or golf and martial arts. What is it?
Okay, so it would be the formula, right? Building taekwondo athletes, right? You know, I was built into a national level athlete. So having that already paved for me, it was easy to then turn around and pave it for someone else. But the formula is very simple. It's information, repetition, and experience. Right, we want to learn good information, and I do that not only into my taekwondo athletes, but into my golf athletes as well. I want to give them, that's the reason why I didn't go to golf school once, I went twice. I wanted to finish the master's program. I had to write a thesis, I had to learn shot shaping, but more importantly, I learned how to break it down and teach it to others.
Right.
And so giving them good information, not what Jake Parker thinks about the golf swing or what Jake Parker thinks about taekwondo, but looking at the trends, the patterns, the forecasts, giving them good information, good instruction, so they're inside the corridors of correctness,
right?
Both subjects. And then from there, that repetition, repeating it over and over again, sure. So that muscle memory now becomes, it takes charge. And then that builds those experiences, putting yourself in those situations that take us out of our comfort zone, that challenge us, right? Golf is hard. Everyone knows.
So you know that.
So you're a national level martial arts taekwondo guy, and you participated in national.
Yeah,
teacher.
So I won. I won the U.S. Collegiate Nationals. I won it in NYU. I took a silver medal at UC Berkeley, and I took a bronze medal at Princeton.
That's very impressive. Were you underestimated coming out of little old Missoula?
Yeah, one, nobody knew where Missoula was, right? They thought it was Canada, right? You know, and I didn't have really a relationship with them to show them the geography of where I come from, but right. I was there to fight. Now, I think that as the referees would call the athletes into the ring and call the coaches to their coaching chair, I think the guys that I fought, they looked right past me and saw that I had the 88 gold medalist in the Olympics sitting in my coaching chair, and I think they were a little more freaked out about that.
I'm sure they would be.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but we trained. And these guys were passionate about taekwondo. I mean, you don't go to an Olympic level without just, centering your entire life around it. And so, having the right coaches, the right people in your life, I've had mentors my entire life. I've had mentors in taekwondo, from Nick Tursniak to Bakwan Park to Herb Perez to Jay Warwick, Steve Kapner also. These are top level guys that just had focused their entire life, but the relationship was this junior senior relationship where, again, that formula of building information, repetition, and experience into me, they couldn't wait to do it. I observed all that, and that's that attention to detail that my dad built into me. And so,
I want to go back to his dad for a second. So he was a clinical psychologist here in Missoula.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you in the pecking order of the family? Are you one or do you have other sibs?
I have three sisters. So I have one older sister and I have two younger sisters.
Wow. So did he also work with each of the sisters in the same way, like finding kind of what their passion was and kind of helping them?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
My dad was about investing in all of us, right? I mean, he's literally...
What an amazing guy.
Literally the smartest man that I know. And I'll tell you, one of the most endearing qualities that was such a big example to me, especially as I've become a father, is how consistent he was.
Mm.
He wanted to pour himself into all of us, and he would do it through wisdom. He would do it through counsel. He would also allow us to fail, right? He would allow us to make those mistakes and to learn from him, and then he would help us. It's kind of like the relationship, like Arnie, as you were a caddy, right? You didn't prevent the golfer from getting into trouble, but you sure helped him navigate getting out of it. And I want to say that's probably what my dad helped us do the most, right? Now, we sometimes got into the sticky stuff, but...
Did his dad do the same for him?
No, his dad beat the heck out of him all the time.
So his response to that was to be the exact opposite.
I think my grandfather, his dad, just a different mentality. Different generation, different mentality. They thought, you know, just whip it out of them, and
right.
you know, and it was never in a hostile, vicious way. But it was, I mean, there was a corporal punishment that
you got smacked.
Escalated. Yes, you did.
You got smacked back
tough
in those
love,
days.
Back porch painted red.
That's right, right. Exactly.
And I think my dad was just I think he adopted a much more different approach, but he was also educated enough to do it.
Where did he go to school?
He went to University of Montana and then got his master's degree at UNLV, and then he went get his PhD online.
Got it.
Yeah.
So was your mother in the home too?
Yes, absolutely.
And so how did she relate to all of this and what you were doing? It's not, you know, boys often, when you have three girls, you know, sort of have a relationship with mom as well.
Well, I'd be the first one to admit I'm my mother's son.
Yes.
My mother is.
I love you the most.
Oh, Mom, I do. Mom, I love you. I'm putting a shout out to that. I want the whole world to know.
Yeah.
Everything my mom has ever touched has turned to gold. You know, she did Mary Kay and won the car.
Wow.
Pink V. You know, she was a dog breeder, and those puppies were sold before they were born. She showed dogs. My mom also was a waitress at a place here in town called Moose Magoo's. Mm-hmm. And they brought her over to, right now it's the Holiday Inn Parkside.
Right.
Uh-huh.
But back then it was the Sheridan. And they brought her over as a waitress. And 9 years later, she was the general manager of that entire hotel.
Wow.
So my mom has always had this trajectory. And so she, late in life, went to cosmetology school. And it was something that she always wanted to do. And so back when my mom was 20, that generation, being a cosmetologist was almost a second-class citizen.
Do you mind talking about what your sisters do? Where are they now?
Well, I have one sister that is in Iowa, one sister that is in Big Fork, and then I have a baby sister that lives here in Missoula.
Okay.
Right? And so one is an aspiring artist. One is just, you know, working in retail. And then I have my baby sister. She's working at UPS and then working at Kohl's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Yeah. And the Big Fork one is the artist.
My mom's side of the family, my granddad was a Western artist. His name was Glade Roberts.
Okay.
And so I have collected probably 30 of his bronzes and probably twice as many of his oil paintings. And they were all Western scenes. And and so, yeah.
And does she work in a gallery there?
No. She works kind of at home. But
I got her.
Her art studio. Yeah, her art studio is home based.
Okay.
So I want to get back a little bit to the zen of golf here.
Yes.
I was watching a clip a couple of weeks ago about Gary Player, who at 81 years or 82 is still getting lessons and getting advice from other golfers about his swing. I also saw at one of the tournaments, Jack Nicholson, the same thing, talking to other people about what he should do. Yeah, I mean Jack Nicklaus, not Jack Nicholson. He probably
needs the help
anymore.
As well.
Yeah, well, he needs help anyway.
He's a player.
So your whole life, you know, you're learning and you're changing, and things can happen. Like a couple of weeks ago, you know, J.J. Spaun, banging away, never gets anywhere, and all of a sudden, you know, in a tournament where one under is going to win it, which is very unique these days.
Absolutely,
he comes in and drops us. 42-foot putt or something on the last hole to win it?
Yes.
So there's always inspirations like that.
Absolutely, 100%.
But since you started, and you know now you're down the road quite a bit, what has changed about the game that either inspires you or causes you to take pause a little bit?
Mm. You know, what inspires me is that, you know, the golf is it's almost like this living, breathing entity. You know, I think about it and I joke about it when I'm teaching a playing lesson where I can be out on the golf course and I roll in a birdie putt and I feel like the golf course wasn't paying attention to me. And then all of a sudden I steal a birdie from the golf course and now it's put its eyes on me and its focus, right? It's the game is growing all the time. The things that inspire me are the etiquette, right? The way that you know, the dress codes, the way that people treat one another. You know, that there was an article that I read years ago, just totally happenstance, where I got on into an airplane and someone had left a Golf Digest in front of me. And in that magazine was this article called The Golf Verdict on O.J. Simpson. And I mean, I grabbed it and I read it. Now, this writer for Golf Digest said, hey, listen, I didn't run in the same circles with the Juice. You know, I wasn't, you know, one of his friends. But every once in a while, I got to play golf with him. And so as this writer goes on, he said, you know, he said he never watched O.J. lose his temper. He said he never watched O.J. lie about what club he hit, meaning he hit a 7-iron and told everybody it was a pitching wedge.
Right.
He said he never saw him cheat on the scorecard. Right. He was just very pleasant to play golf with. And mm-hmm. what this writer goes on to say is those who cheat in life don't necessarily cheat in golf, but those who cheat in golf always cheat in life. Right? So the verdict was that he didn't do it. Right.
Right.
So,
right.
Take that for what it's worth.
Exactly. But as I watch golf, there's a lot of expectations that are created by the TV, that mm-hmm. everybody's got to hit, you know, like DeChambeau, it's got to drive 340 or whatever the heck he drives, 350.
Right.
There's also a lot of, you know, what I would say, you know, obviously the money issues, mm-hmm. right? But I'm a traditionalist, and maybe you are too. I don't like them tinkering around with the game. I didn't like them tinkering around with baseball the way they have.
Right.
And I don't like, you know, some golf courses now around the country I see are offering, you know, playing 6 holes instead of 9 or even 18. You can do 3 sixes so you can get out quicker. You can play faster. Right. Or they have marshals moving you along.
Oh, yes.
When I played, the one time I played Pebble Beach, there was a marshal like on our case all the whole time. When you want to savor it, paying $550.
Right.
You want to savor it a little
bit. Enjoy this a little bit.
You got to move it up. You're behind pace. And you've. So how do you feel about, you know, the attempts to either speed it up or make it more, you know, enticing to younger people by, you know, changing the rules?
You know, I think there's a perfect example, and that would be probably the Waste Management Tournament.
Right.
Right. So we have, if you contrast the, you know, Augusta National and the Masters, and then you look at the Waste Management Tournament, this is my own humble opinion, right? But I look at the etiquette and the courtesy and the class and the elegance of how they put on the Masters.
Right.
And then we have the Waste Management Tournament where they're throwing water bottles and hot dogs
and
onto the green
and
booing and heckling. And that's not golf to me.
No,
right? I agree. And
with
so
you
when
on
you
that.
Say traditionalist, yes, I might sound a little nostalgic when I say, you know, I like the, you know, I'm teaching the kids right now at US Kids. You know, like the first thing that we did this morning were take off our golf hat and shake each other's hands and look each other in the eye.
Right.
Right. These little pleasantries or civilities or, etiquettes, you know, that we want to teach this next generation that this is how we behave on a golf course. And so when it gets so crazy and wild, yeah, no thanks. I enjoy the serenity of the golf course. I enjoy the pace of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
And I enjoy the challenge of it.
So you go online and look up a golf club or you go look up something and all of a sudden you're getting 100 social media posts about how to improve your swing speed, how to correct all this kind of stuff. And you're just, I got hundreds of them come your way during a period of piece of time. Mia, can you, putting aside all that stuff, can you improve somebody substantially if somebody's played 30 years or somebody that's only played for a year? Can you, you know, watch them for 10 minutes and know what they can do to make their game better?
You know, that's kind of the what I feel like I was blessed with, you know, like the heart of a teacher. And so, you know, again, it's a lot about my education, about what I've picked up and how I've been mentored and taught to do it. So when I look at it, it's all about your teaching philosophy. You know, Lee Trevino did an interview a few years ago where someone said to Lee Trevino, they said, so are you trying to get all your golfers, this class to swing like you, Lee? You know what I mean? Former Masters winners,
right.
Such a smooth swing. And he said, no. He said, I'm trying to help them master their swing. He said, everyone walks a certain way. Everyone throws a rock a certain way. When I look at someone and I look at the sequence and I look at the chain reaction of either positives or errors in their golf swing, yes, I want to help them master their swing, but within those corridors of correctness, I want to teach those fundamentals. And so it's not about changing and saying these things that you're doing are bad or wrong. It's just adjusting these things so that we can get inside those corridors of correctness so they can master their swing.
Well, it's a very important point because you can't be Bobby Jones. You watch Bobby Jones' swing if you've ever seen it.
Beautiful.
It's like beautiful,
it's
and there's
beautiful.
No effort. And, you know, he goes a little faster and you can hear the swish. I mean, Freddie Couples, I walked the course about 4 or 5 years ago with Freddie Couples and
another beautiful golf swing.
I mean, he was playing with Ernie Els, and Ernie Els is about 6 inches taller than him and about 40 or 50 pounds heavier than him. And Freddie was out driving him on every hole.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks like he's not even swinging the club. I'm watching him. I'm saying, that's the way I swing. You know, 70 miles an hour, it looks like, when he's blasting it down.
Trying to crush it.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. It's within the parameters. You can't make somebody into a Freddie Couples.
Well, so, you know, teaching lessons, I mean, it's... I want to kind of take a look at the whole ensemble. I mean, it's such a symphony between the lower half of the body and the upper half of the body. There are times that I'm looking for that one thing instead of 10 things, the one thing that can correct lots of things. Mm-hmm. And so trying to find what is in the middle, what will connect those things and start them taking the club back in the direction that they need to at a rhythm and tempo that they're in control of. But really, you know, there's times when I'm teaching a lesson that they're nervous, right? They're nervous because I'm a teaching professional, and
right.
they want to impress, and they want to, they want to wow me.
Watch
and instead, I kind of stop them immediately and say, look, there's a gal that I taught yesterday, and her name was Hannah, and I said, hey, listen, I'm not up on some pedestal. I'm actually Team Hannah. I'm here to help you improve.
Let's do a quick idea. Our guest is Jake Parker. He's with the Ranch Club and a master of Taekwondo. So you're on Team Hannah. Do you have a similar type of relationship with your students in Taekwondo?
100%.
So tell us how that got started. How did you start your school?
Well, so starting the school, I started Taekwondo when I was 7. Right.
Wow.
And there was a bully situation, and my dad was like, listen, you're going to have to face it. You know, I can't fight your battles for you.
Yes.
So he looked at the boxing clubs and wrestling clubs, and he found Steve Kapner, my first Taekwondo master. Mm. And so I started, you know, at age 7, and I just loved it. I mean, I just grew in it. I couldn't wait to go to tournaments. I couldn't wait to compete. You know, I was fast and I was flexible, and it was something that just really was that I just made my own. And so, you know, I'd gone on to win lots of tournaments, and as far as, you know, opening the Taekwondo school, you'd almost fast forward through a decade of my life where I was building 911 systems and traveling out between North Carolina and Mississippi, all 8 states in the Southeast, where, you know, I trained people in 911, I built 911, I installed 911, right? So,
right.
You know, so fast forward to that, and that would be at the time where I met my wife and things were kind of shifting, where I didn't want to be on the road 3 weeks a month. I wanted to spend time with her. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Right. And so I thought, well, what can I do? And so I took 5 months, wrote a business plan, went and got funding, purchased assets. You know, I have a fleet of 12 passenger vans where I currently pick up from 10 different schools after school. The kids come, they have a time to get homework done, eat a snack, and then we do class every single day, Monday through Friday. And then parents pick them up when they get off work. And so that started 21 years ago when I was 30.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is, how many students do you have?
Well, we're right around 88 students,
uh-huh.
But I've had as many as 153.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, but investing in my Taekwondo students, right, there was an interesting transition. It was about 6 years ago, I stopped fighting nationally. You know, I won a silver medal at U.S. Nationals 2 years in a row, and I was ready to transition from athlete to coach.
Mm. Right.
And so that, I mean, it was just such a beautiful time for me to be that mentor for them. And so, you know, taking kids to nationals, it was me and 2 other coaches that put together a team of 47 of us. And we won the U.S. National Championship, the AAU National Championship,
wow.
3 years in a row, back to back to back.
Wow.
And so taking kids to that
impressive.
National level.
Missoula.
From Missoula, Montana.
Montana. So
our pride is brimming over, busting out.
So have you had a kid walk in the door and you know he's going to be great?
Or no,
golf.
No, no. Taekwondo, I think one of the things that I've lost in all the years that I've taught it is the ability to generate a first impression. There's so much that changes between 6 and 9 months. You can bring me some kid who's naturally athletic, has great fast twitch, and I can't say that that's going to be the guy that goes the distance and crosses mm-hmm. the finish line. I've also had the kid that came in who was tight and stiff and just didn't get it and took a really a long time to develop. And all of a sudden, he's going to nationals and having tremendous success. It's so tough to see it, right?
Yeah.
But we just stay the journey. And so the philosophy, especially as we're coming in for Taekwondo or golf, you know, I don't like that idea of 10 steps down 10 paths. I want you to pick 100 steps down one path,
mm-hmm.
right? And I feel like I've done that in Taekwondo, and I'm ready to do that in golf.
Is there any other sport that you're interested in developing this capability in? This is replicable.
Elk hunting and fly fishing.
Hunting. Motorcycle repair.
Yeah.
Zen and the art of.
And the art of, right.
So Jake, in a town like Missoula, where it's a small town. Did you build this student body or this school based on word of mouth? I mean, just referrals and people? Was there a recruitment plan that you had? Like, how did you build this?
Certainly. So
911.
Yeah. Right. Just put it out there, right? Guys, it's funny to me because I
love 911.
And I really, I'm going to have to say this with just, you know, with humility and with careful ease, but 21 years ago, I had radio guys that wanted me to advertise my Taekwondo school on the radio. I had TV guys and I had newspaper guys.
Right.
Now, newspaper was that big crinkly thing that had stuff on it, right? Yeah, we don't think we have them anymore.
Kindling now.
Kindling, yeah, fire starter.
Right. They got smaller and smaller and then they just disappeared.
And then boop, online. Right? So 21 years ago, you know, I mean, I put vinyl all over the vans. You know, it was a lot of word of mouth.
I would have to believe.
So, but you can imagine that my vans are traveling to 10 different schools. Parents are seeing that.
Right.
I took flyers and brochures to all the principals and introduced myself and say, I'm going to run an after school program.
Right.
Well, then principals and schools, they started to see the benefits, you know, that, you know, the progress that I'm making with sometimes some tough kids that had a hard time behaving themselves in school. And all of a sudden, they're starting to see some changes in them. And so I started having even Missoula School District 1, Missoula School District 4, and even Target Range.
So do you have a student assistance program for kids that necessarily they can't afford, you know, the lessons?
Yes, and that's through some other agencies.
Got it.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I mean, there's been making Taekwondo
affordable and accessible.
Accessible, yeah. Making it, you know, something that everybody can be a part of, sure.
Are there similar type of students or, you know, schools and communities in Bozeman and some of the larger cities in Montana?
You know, there are. There's, you know, similar schools, you know, same, but different here in
right.
Missoula, definitely in Bozeman. You know, the Montana Taekwondo Association is one big association that covers the entire state.
Okay.
And so when we get together for recreational tournaments, it's all those schools, you know, always participating together. And
okay.
So, yeah, we build relationships with, you know, schools in Butte and schools in Bozeman, MSU, schools in Kalispell, Dillon, Montana. I mean, they're all over the place.
That's yeah. great. What do you think about, like, the whole, we've had guests here before from the MMA, the world of MMA. Like, that's such a more public expression of the martial arts.
Absolutely.
Right? And what's the, do any of your students look at that as being like, that's something I want to aspire to?
I've had only one, you know, and really? That was years ago that loved doing Taekwondo tournaments, but then also really wanted to enjoy the MMA ring, get inside the octagon and
yeah.
have it be as real as it gets. And, you know, he had a lot of success with it. He was here with me for 4 years while he was going to the school, to the University of Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he graduated, he went back to Pennsylvania and started his big boy job and left MMA and, you know, started a career, got married and, you know, he's doing really
amazing.
Great. Yeah.
It's amazing. So are the worlds colliding in the sense of, are you planning to do any teaching of Taekwondo or martial arts at the Ranch Club? Like,
well, you can imagine that, you know, in 21 years and even more than that, I was the head instructor at the University of Montana program for a decade.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, I taught the health and human performance credit in the morning. I taught the adult beginner, intermediate and advanced class at one point, which was kind of interesting. It was my dad had said, do you realize that you are now the head instructor of the same school that you started taking Taekwondo from when you were 7? So I kind of became, right?
How cool is that?
Kind of full circle, right?
Right, totally.
And so, you know, I'm not going to be bringing Taekwondo to the Ranch Club. It's going to be something that, you know, in the next 6 years when my son graduates high school and
Your
goes off
Jackson.
To college. Yeah, I'm going to either find someone to carry, you know, sell the school to, and they'll transition the school in their direction, and then I'll transition full time to golf. And
nice.
So, you know, so a plan, but not anything that's going to happen anytime soon.
Let me flip back to golf for a minute.
Do it.
There are a lot of golf listeners in Missoula. Let me ask you a couple of questions. One, for the average golfer, the weekend golfer, the once a week golfer,
the hacker.
Well, even a little bit better than a hacker, you know.
Okay.
A 15 or 20 to 5 handicapper.
Okay.
Does the ball make a difference to somebody like that?
Yes.
And why?
Well, we're looking for constants. right?
Right.
Right. We're looking for, you know, like the, I use the same set of clubs. That's a constant. Right. I'm building one swing between the pitching wedge and the driver. That's a constant.
Right.
Right. When we start flipping around and going different golf balls from polyurethane cover to Serlin cover, it, you know, it reacts off the golf club differently.
Right.
And so I made that really fun mistake when my golf coach years ago said, so what ball do you play? And I held up this Rubbermaid tote and I was like, these ones.
Yeah. Right. You know, whatever goes, it, whatever goes, I got.
We have no, we're not. We're going to find one ball. It's going to be a constant. You'll practice with it. You'll play with it. If you change, then we'll find a ball that then you will practice with and play with. But it'll be constant, right? We're looking. We're looking. We're trying to make golf repeatable. We're trying to make golf predictable.
Right.
Right. So let's not keep throwing wild cards into the system. You know, with Arnie, different golf balls every
when
time.
When you find a golf ball in the water, let's just put it in for to practice with.
Every year, there's a new driver out, for example.
Here we go.
Does it make a difference if you have a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old? Is there something coming out
equipment. Every
year that makes your game better?
Yeah, you know, the technology. So kind of back up. Think about the technology. The technology that golf has advanced to right now. This was kind of the struggle for golf courses, right?
Right.
Because we don't have the same athletes right now in the golf world, in the PGA right now, that are playing these tour events that are out of shape, right? We have these guys that are in shape, they're working out, they're very athletic.
Sure.
Then you put that kind of technology in their hand, and now golf courses are saying, we can't make right. We can't make this hole 30 yards longer.
Right.
Right. So you can see that the technology as it advances, yeah. That's
for the pros. What about Scott and me?
For Scott and you. All right. What kind of handicap are we talking about,
million.
Boys?
But he and I was going to suggest, he and I like to play a scramble game where he and I play just the two of us, and we talk and we hit together.
Right.
And that's our game.
You guys hit your own shot, and then you take the best one and you hit it there. It's awesome.
It just keeps us together. We're always talking and we're always having fun. And then
planning and all that sort of stuff.
And it's the way I like to play golf. And then, right, if we play
somebody
our friends
else,
we're
playing normally.
Yeah.
But I play the same thing with my son. Yeah. He cannot wait to play a scramble with me because, I mean, we're always about shooting low.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do.
And so when you get this little monkey who's coming from the forward tees, and I'm coming from my the gold tees, right. He's got it kind of an advantage. Like he's really up there. So I mean, he puts me on my heels where I'm trying to keep that drive a little bit past where he can reach right now.
It's like,
and he's only getting better.
It's like Tiger and Charlie, except Charlie doesn't have to play anymore from in front of him. He just kills it from wherever he's playing.
What's the age limitation? When can you start playing from the silvers?
When can we start playing from this? Anytime you want to play from the silvers.
But isn't there a rule?
Yes. I mean, yeah, we're looking at, like age 60.
60?
60.
You're way out.
But if you look at it in terms of 60, that's something to look forward to. One,
yes.
That you're still alive, and two, that you're now you get
I
to
will
go
play from
golf
the gold
from the silver.
One with the youngins. But when Arnie and I play scramble, it's
from
the silvers.
From the silvers because of my rapidly advancing age. We play from the silvers.
Oh, we have so much fun, though. That's that's our game.
Well, but think about it. Just because you're closer to the pin or closer to the green doesn't necessarily mean that that's an advantage.
No.
Because you got it.
No.
You still have to put a good swing on it.
And you still have to
hit the ball.
Putt.
Yeah. we still got a few more shots before the green.
So I have a place in Vegas, and it's on the 10th hole of Highland Falls Golf Course. It's a par 4, short par 4, even from the back. Mm-hmm. And I sit there sometimes for 3 or 4 hours watching, people in their own carts or people that are out there, playing, and you can tell by how the cart's outfitted sometimes and how they're dressed and how their swing is, whether they're decent golfers or not.
Or whether you're in trouble, sitting on the patio of your,
I'm far away. I'm 40, 50
good.
Yards away. I rarely see anybody par that hole.
Really?
And it's a normal, I mean, I don't know what they tell everybody about their handicaps, but I could see him chipping up short, chipping over, mm-hmm. getting on the green. I don't think in 4 months I saw anybody one putt the green even. I mean, so it's interesting to me to actually, never in my life have I sat back and watched, 100 golfers go by.
Yeah, so Arnie, do you know what you're watching? You're watching that golf is a very cerebral game.
Yes.
Right? I mean... as I'm coaching and teaching golf, I'm teaching one swing, one full firm swing from the pitching wedge all the way to the driver.
Right.
The only thing that's going to change, right, is ball position is going to change. Grip, aim, stance, posture, all that stuff stays the same. So as we're doing that, right, we build golf courses. You know, they build golf courses all over the place with water and sand and uphill, downhill, dog legs to take you out of the one swing that right. you're trying to maintain.
Right.
So someone gets to this par four that you're describing. I can only imagine that golf exists in between the right ear and the left ear.
Yep,
right? It's in the gray matter.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's that kind of game. All right, let's take a quick break. Our guest is Jake Parker from the Ranch Club. Back after these words. All right, we are back with our guest, Jake Parker.
So, Jake, at the Ranch Club and at your Taekwondo school, what events are coming up now that people ought to pay attention to?
All right, the events that we have going on right now is that we are going to be finishing this week, the first week of 4 weeks of U.S. Kids Golf Camp. Now, there are still open spots for the general public to reach out to the Ranch Club. There's applications that you fill out. That U.S. Golf Camp is a Monday through Friday, 9 to noon, includes lunch, 8 hours of instruction, and we cover everything from putting, chipping, pitching, full swing iron, hybrid, fairway wood, and driver and sand. So this golf camp, you know, it's got its own curriculum. It's got its own challenge pins that the kids are always constantly trying to earn. And at the end of the week, we do a kids scramble tournament. And so we've got we get to hand four different trophies out to four different winners at the end of this week.
Good. And if you're just an average golfer, can you still have slots to go out there and play at the Ranch Club while this is going on?
No, if you are, the Ranch Club is a private club.
Right.
We went private in 2013.
Right.
And so, you know, as far as access to the U.S. kids, absolutely. The public can kind of reach out to us as far as that.
Good.
As far as access to the golf course, you know, again, a private golf course, we have a member list of about 450 members.
Right.
And so they really occupy the golf course.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And what's happening at the Taekwondo school?
Now, at the Montana Taekwondo Academy, we also have summer camps there as well. Now, those summer camps are much different than my golf camps. Okay, the parents are going to drop them off in between 8 and 10 in the morning, and then I have them until 5 p.m. Now, we get into lots of trouble. We get shaving cream fights, water balloon fights. I take them bowling. I give them golf lessons. We go hiking. I mean, I try to pour as much of my athleticism into them so that, you know, I can teach them how to bowl better, how to hit a golf
right.
club better.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how do we get a hold of you? How does our listeners get a hold of you?
So you can get a hold of me through the Montana Taekwondo Academy Facebook page, or you can just text or call me on my cell phone, 406-544-5443.
And what about at the Ranch Club? Same thing?
Same thing.
Very good.
What a great hour. Jake, this was great. I'm so glad we brought you.
Yeah. We learned a lot.
Yeah, you're a great guest.
Guys, this was my honor. I sure appreciate the opportunity. This was great.
Thank you so
much.
Thank
you. Take care.
All right, you guys as well.
All right, Arn, I'll see you next week.
Next week, Scott.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.